Okay, I'll ask the first question.
To make this look good.
I'll ask the first question. Scott.
Yes, so
you gave a keynote at PDC. We're going to see some of that content today. You're going to show us a lot of demos. I know you're going to write code on stage. I know these people love it. But, of course, there's a couple of things. We have a lot of people here who went to TechEd in Berlin. I think some who went to PDC in LA. And now we have Mix coming up in March. And we definitely want people here from the audience and others to go to Mix in Las Vegas in March. Who doesn't want to go there? But what can we expect from Mix? What is the top three things at Mix?
Put you on the spot. Just ask me to give away all the secrets. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you, everyone, for coming out here today. It's amazing. It's great to see so many people in the audience. And fingers crossed we're going to have the screen working shortly so that we can show some really good things today. In terms of content I'm going to cover today, I basically have three tech talks that I'm going to be doing. The first is going to be covering VS 2010 and .NET 4 from a web development perspective, show off a bunch of the new coding features that are in VS, a lot of the editing capabilities, and then talk a little bit about ASP.NET 4 and some of the web development capabilities there. We're going to do a talk on ASP.NET MVC and talk about both the new V2 features that will be coming out, but also for people that aren't familiar with MVC, provide kind of a quick refresher course in terms of how it works. We got some great talks coming up on VS 2010 Enterprise Development, TFS. And then I'm going to talk about Silverlight 4 at the end and show off some of the new capabilities that are coming as part of that. The good news is all the things I'm showing today, you can actually download and start using yourself. So there's a lot of stuff that you can basically duplicate all the demos that I'm going to do today. And then, as was mentioned, we have a bunch of things that will be coming out in the spring at Mix, as well as kind of events later on. And so I think you'll see a lot more Silverlight. You'll see a lot more news around IE9 and a bunch of things on mobile early next year that thankfully build on top of everything I'm going to be showing today and hopefully just make it even better.
Okay, great. And that's only 3 months away, so perfect. One thing I actually forgot to mention is that outside, of course, we have a couple of Surface units, and we have a couple of our great partners showing off their Surface apps. We have Tenteo / Blue Fragments, and we have TouchTake, which is actually a small Swedish partner who created some beautiful apps for some of the local Danish companies. So go out there and talk to them and hear about their experiences and try Surface out for yourself. We also have actually, we have, of course, MS Press, so you can gain new knowledge from MS Press. We also have a stand where we talk about BizSpark and WebSiteSpark, our two new offerings for startup companies or web development companies. You should definitely go out there and talk to Sisse and Yes, I think it's out there. And I know you have big feelings about BizSpark. As a program, right? I mean, our whole push into startup companies and the offering we have with free software and free licensing for startup companies is
yeah. One of the things we have that we've kind of launched over the last year is these things we call the Spark programs. And so we have BizSpark for startups. We recently launched a program called Website Spark, which is available for anyone who builds websites or web apps on behalf of others. And has less than 10 employees in their company. BizSpark is available for any new startup or startup that's been in business, I think, less than 2 years?
3 years.
Basically, the way the Spark programs work is it doesn't cost anything to enter, and for the first 3 years, you don't pay any cost at all to Microsoft, and you get basically free access to a whole bunch of software. So with BizSpark, you can have, I think, unlimited number of servers. You get a whole bunch of copies of the high-end versions of Visual Studio, SQL Server, and pretty much everything. Website Spark, which again is available to anyone that builds websites or web apps on behalf of others, and has less than 10 employees. You get 3 copies of Visual Studio Professional, the 2008 edition now, and then when 2010 ships, you'll be able to get that as well as part of the program. And then you get 3 copies of Windows Server, 3 copies of SQL Server, 2 copies of Expression Web, 1 copy of Expression Studio, and a whole bunch of training and other opportunities. And the great thing is, again, for 3 years you pay nothing. At the end of the 3 years, there's no obligation to pay anything. So it's not like you're suddenly have to pay a bunch of money at the end of the 3 years. You can stop using the software if you want. And then if you do want to continue to use it, there's also some really good pricing discounts that are available at the end of the 3 years. I don't know the price in
it's okay.
Here, but I know in the U.S. it's about $199 a year to get Windows Server plus SQL Server.
You should mention the U.S. prices. The dollar's simply too low.
The dollar's really low. Hopefully prices here are even cheaper.
But the details, I mean, we have a stand out here. We have people out there who will help you with all the details. You don't have to remember all this. Go out there, get the information, and get going on the Spark program.
Yeah. If you're interested in joining the Spark programs, you can send me email. My email address is scottgu@microsoft.com, and I can give you a Spark code. And it takes, for website Spark, it takes less than about 3 minutes to enroll. So just shoot me an email, and I'll give you the code, and then you basically go to the website, enter the code, and you can immediately start downloading the software.
And if you want to save, well, I think Scott gets about 1,000 mails a day. If you want to save his time, his inbox, you can mail me, olek@microsoft.com, or Henrik WH, who's actually running the program out of my team in Denmark. So we have tons of people who will help you join the these programs. Now, maybe we should open up, because I don't think we're done yet with the projector. Amazing. Maybe we should open up. Has anybody warmed up a question by now? Wow.
Well, tell you what I'll do. There aren't any questions. I can start a little bit in terms of talking about DevTen and VS
I'll get off the stage then. And
fingers crossed the screen will come back at some point. And I can actually show some of DevTen too. The first talk I'm going to be talking about a little bit is the new release we're coming out with .NET and Visual Studio. We sometimes call it internally DevTen, but it's basically Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4. It's a pretty major release for us that brings with it kind of a ton of new capabilities, and we hope a lot of improvements. From an overall perspective, you're going to see a lot of new features, and so we'll show some of those new features today. But more than just adding features, one of the core themes that we have with this release is, you know, how do we actually not just keep adding features and throwing more features at you, but also how do we go back with existing features and refine them? How do we clean up the overall development experience? And ultimately, how do we make things simpler and more streamlined for doing common tasks? And so a bunch of the demos that I'll be showing today, hopefully, are ones that you can say, oh, great, they finally did that, or oh, it's great they made that better. And hopefully also you'll see a lot of features that don't require months and months of training or learning in order to take advantage of them. There's lots of kind of small features that end up being pretty big because you can take advantage of them immediately in terms of the IDE and also within the framework itself. And so we're pretty excited about it from that standpoint of a release. It should be compatible with all your existing apps. So if you're using the beta today and you find something that didn't just work that in your old app, please let us know. But the goal is should be fairly easy to install, upgrade any existing app. It does install and work what's called side-by-side with previous releases of .NET and Visual Studio. So you can have .NET 3.5 and Visual Studio 2008 on the same machine that you have .NET 4 and VS 2010. And you can continue working with your existing projects. Your existing applications, by default, will continue to use the old version of .NET. So it'll use the version of .NET they were built against. You can then optionally roll it forward to use the new .NET 4. But the nice thing about that kind of side-by-side capability is it means that if you have a server or a client apps, you don't have to retest everything. You can keep, you know, if you install .NET 4, it's not going to modify the behavior of any existing app. And then on an app-by-app basis, you can choose to roll forward to use the new runtime and take advantage of the new features. In terms of capabilities, all up there are, well, it's a little better. If we can just squeeze it down a little bit, then we'll be perfect. In terms of, at least the text is very readable. well, somewhere in between would be really good. In terms of the new capabilities, there's kind of a bunch of things that we won't get a chance to cover today. By the way, let me know if there's anything I'm supposed to do with this or in terms of helping with this resizing, or I'll just wait until you're done. But in terms of the new capabilities, there's tons of capabilities kind of on the server side, the client side, in terms of improvements. Lots of improvements on the client side with both WPF as well as Windows Forms. WPF in particular has a bunch of new capabilities and improvements around better text, graphics, new controls, data binding, et cetera. Lots of improvements with ASP.NET, which I'm going to be talking a lot more about in this talk. In terms of capabilities, lots of things around the core engine that are a lot better, and the base class libraries. You'll see lots of improvements in terms of just kind of miscellaneous libraries that have gotten a lot better. We're also spending a lot of time with this release focusing on what we call multi-core development, and so a lot of extensions to .NET, which enable much better parallel development for a bunch of scenarios. Data access is much better. Again, I'll go into much more depth about that later today. We have Silverlight support built into VS 2010, lots of code editing features. A big focus this release that we are working on is around test-driven development, unit testing, and agile-based practices. And so I'll show that a lot in my ASP.NET MVC talk, which I'll be doing second. Both from a framework perspective, we're spending a lot of time to make it easier to do testing and TDD. But you also see in my second talk, I'll be showing off some of the new Visual Studio IDE features, which enable you to do kind of unit test based first and then actually implement the functionality second with a nice TDD workflow. Lots of improvements in the source control system that we'll show in TFS with things like work item and bug tracking. We're getting closer. We might even be there, almost there. Yes, okay. Everything readable in the back? Okay. With that, we can go ahead and get started. In terms of best way to make this talk work, if you can make it a little interactive, that's great. If not, that's okay too. But in general, please feel free to raise your hand at any point, ask questions, ask hard questions, try to stump me, see if you can make me cry on stage. Feel free to throw things, preferably not at me, but yeah, do make it interactive. If you do ever have any questions that you don't get answered or you don't want to raise it during the talk, you feel free to send me an email. My contact information there in terms of my email, my blog, and my Twitter address are all up there. But again, please do raise your hand as we're going along and ask questions. In terms of kind of, as I mentioned about VS 2010 and .NET 4, there's going to be a lot of capabilities that we'll talk about today. Hopefully make the end-to-end scenarios a lot cleaner. A lot more integration end-to-end also in terms of kind of just avoiding you having to figure out all these 10 things, how do I plug them together, trying to make sure that we kind of nail the 80-90% scenario in a very, very smooth workflow, but at the same time trying to make sure that at every point along the way we still have rich extensibility and customization options. So you always have the flexibility to either use the built-in functionality or replace it and customize it to meet whatever needs you have. And then again, hopefully you'll see quickly in some of the demos, what we've really tried to do is also just sort of provide a bunch of value out of the box that you can take advantage of without having to learn massive new things, but you can kind of go, oh, in 10 minutes I understand this, I know how I can take advantage of it immediately on a couple projects I'm already working on. And since I've talked enough, let's actually get rid of slides and show some demos. So what I have here is a version of Visual Studio 2010 that's loaded. This is actually the beta 2 release that you can download today. And what I thought I'd do is actually, before we get to web development and features in ASP.NET, both in the tool and the runtime, I thought I'd spend a little bit of time just talking about coding development, since that's something that, regardless of what type of app you're building, everyone spends time focusing on. And with Visual Studio 2010, we try to spend a lot of time actually just making code editing and the overall coding experience inside the IDE a lot more productive. So what I have here is a fairly large project, or a medium-sized project. It's the ASP.NET MVC source code. You can download today. It's an open source, released under an open source license. It's probably, I don't know, 30, 40,000 lines of code. So it's not a huge project, but it has a bunch of code in it, and it's going to help me show off some of these features that we have in VS 2010 that specifically improve the code editing experience. First feature I want to talk about is, let me first ask, how many people here have multiple monitors? Great. Now, as you know, Visual Studio has always supported multi-monitor support. If you have two monitors, all you need to do is just pop open two versions of Visual Studio, put one on one monitor, put one on the other, and there you go. We've gone one step further, though, in VS 2010, and we've actually now allowed you to use one version of Visual Studio and share it across multiple monitors, which is really what multi-monitor support should be. So one of the things that you can do now is take any tool window, any designer, any property editor, and basically now drag it outside the main IDE. If I did have a second monitor, you could basically just copy it to another machine, snap it to be full, and now I can actually edit my project across multiple screens. And then obviously at any point, if I want to redock it, just bring it back, click, expand, and you can basically bring it back into the IDE. So now it's really easy for you to split apart your app or split apart your project or solution across multiple screens. Hopefully it gives you a lot more real estate to work with. A couple other things that we focused on a lot in VS 2010 is around just sort of helping you discover, find, and understand your code base. In fact, in a lot of the usability studies that we do, we see a lot of people actually spend more time looking at code than actually even writing code, trying to understand how it's being used, how you can refactor it, how you can make it better. And so there's a lot of improvements we've done to the IDE and the editor in particular, some big, some subtle, that hopefully just improve discoverability and understandability of code. Let's look at one of these subtle improvements. So you'll notice, for example, now like every time you hover or select a variable inside the IDE, we'll actually show you in the function or in that class every place it's being used and just sort of highlight it in the background. Again, very small, subtle thing, but hopefully gives you kind of easier ability to immediately see kind of, okay, how's my code being used? What is it being used for? Pretty much everyone here, I'm sure, uses IntelliSense, and it's been around forever. And so a lot of times, sometimes when things are around forever, you kind of just assume, well, it must, you know, always work this way. One of the things that we did with VS 2010 is sort of subtly look at how we can make it a little bit better. And so today, if I'm using IntelliSense, today if I'm using IntelliSense, I work on a class or something, I'm going to get the full list of all the members on that particular item. Actually, I wonder, it might just be easy enough that you can actually, big enough that you can see it from here. And so if I want to do like get parameter values, I type get parameter, scroll down, hit tab, and I can complete. There's a couple of keystrokes sometimes there. And oftentimes when you're working on an object that has lots and lots of properties or methods, you don't remember exactly what the name of the method is that you're trying to look at. It's something to do with parameters, there's something to do with dictionary, something to do with cache, but I don't remember exactly the name of it and how it starts. So what we've done with VS 2010 is you can now, for example, just type param, and it'll automatically filter the IntelliSense list to only show you anything that starts with param or anything that contains the word param within the list. And this works not only for member IntelliSense, but also for type-based IntelliSense. And again, it makes it a lot easier now if you can't remember exactly what it starts with, but you remember it has an MO in it, just type it and it'll filter automatically. Again, makes it a little bit easier to find stuff. Other thing that we've done is we added a feature, sometimes called Pascal casing, camel casing, that lets you actually filter your lists as well with fewer keystrokes as you're typing. And specifically, we're taking advantage of the fact that in .NET, the design guidelines we use is that every first letter of each word inside a member, we capitalize. And so that way we can see what the different word breaks are. And so if I want to actually call this get controller descriptor, instead of having to type get C in order to filter, I could actually just type get CD, and it'll automatically filter to just those things that have those capitalizations within the namespace. Again, makes it a little bit faster, fewer keystrokes in order to find stuff. Other improvements in terms of finding code in the IDE is there's a new feature, hit control comma, and it brings up this navigate to dialog. This basically gives you a really quick way that you can actually look up to find a type or find a file or find a usage of a type anywhere within your application. So instead of having to do find in all files and do a text search, you can now, for example, just say, show me all the cache instances inside my app. This will show you in real time all the places that you have members or methods with the name cache in it. Just single click, and you can basically jump immediately to that point within your code. At any point, as you're making changes in your code base, this is always kept up to date. You can type dictionary. Again, you can do the GPV, and if you want to actually use kind of Pascal case searching, quickly jump to that location and find it anywhere within an app. So it makes it much quicker now to move around a project, find things, and understand it. Once you find things often, you sometimes want to know, okay, so I have this render view method. Where is it being used? How is it being used within my application? And again, you could do a search within all your files today with VS, or with VS 2010, you can right-click and actually say, show me the call hierarchy of everyone inside my project that actually invokes this method. And so you can see here at the bottom, it's going to show me all the functions that call this method, as well as all the methods that call those methods, and you can recursively go as deep as possible as you want in order to actually understand the usages. You can also look to see who actually, what other types are used by it, and if it's subclassed, who actually overrides that method within derived base classes. That makes it a lot easier to find out how the code's being used, who's using it, where it's being used from. In times we have big code bases also, sometimes it's useful to understand kind of what does the exact call sequence look like for that particular point in the code, and meaning, you know, where is it being called into, where is it calling from, how does it interact. Also, with VS 2010, you can double-click, and with the Ultimate SKU, you can say generate sequence diagram. And what this does is allows you to, on the fly, basically analyze your code base, and it'll generate for you an interactive graph that'll actually show you the sequence diagram of where it's calling into, where that in turn calls into, and where it's being called from. The nice thing is it's not only a read-only graph here, so obviously I can scroll through it to look through it, but you can also, if you bring up the toolbox, you can basically extend the diagram, change the diagram, tweak it, customize it, check into your code base. So much easier for you, again, to understand your code, document it, and be able to navigate your way around it. There's going to be lots of other editor improvements that you'll see throughout the stack. This editor actually is built entirely using WPF. So, in fact, everything right now you're seeing on the screen is WPF 4 based, and we basically did a pretty major UI refresh with VS. We're trying to make it so it still looks the same, so we're not doing blinking animations in your IDE, but basically by doing it to WPF, it saves us a bunch of time for productivity so we can add features. It also means that the IDE is super extensible so that you can plug in your own extensions anywhere within the IDE, at the text editor level, the project level, the shell level, and tweak and customize the system. We've also added a bunch of editing improvements. I've only shown a few of them here. I'm going to be talking in the second talk a lot more about test-driven development and some of the TDD workflow editor improvements that we've made. One editor improvement, for some reason, everyone seems to love, I thought I'd just close on here, is vertical selection. So you can now hold down the Alt key and then basically vertically select something. And now, see, everyone always laughs at this. I don't know why. But anyway, stupid pet trick. But it is actually useful. And so, again, you'll see lots of other kind of just overall editor and text editor improvements show up in the product to take advantage of. Other things that we then have improved, I thought I'd actually go ahead and show, is snippet support. So how many people here do web development? Great. A lot of times when you do web development, you probably end up having to type text and controls inside your markup. We've tried to make that even better with VS 2010. So obviously you can use a designer. You can, you know, today you might do ASP colon, text box, and then have to type in all your attributes. We've added snippet support to HTML and JavaScript in 2010. So if I wanted to go to text box now, I can just say text box, tab, tab, and it'll auto-complete and basically expand to a full text box. If you want to do something like, say, a list view, again, you could do list view, tab, tab, and basically auto-complete and even get templates. If you want to do an anchor tag, tab, tab, I can say page2.aspx. You can have highlight regions in your snippets. You can just then do tab, click me, without having to touch the mouse, escape, and you basically complete. And for ASP.NET developers, a lot of people always complain about having to type run at equals server. Just type run at, tab, tab, and you'll automatically get the server. This is useful for script, for CSS, for a variety of different things. What's nice is it's completely extensible, so you can add your own snippets, plug them into the system. We've also then added snippet support for JavaScript. So, for example, let's say I want to create an encapsulated AJAX control. I could say control, tab, tab. It's going to basically give me the scaffold of an AJAX control. Again, it's using region highlighting, so if I want to, I could say denmark.ui tab. Notice how all the declarations now inside the control were updated for it. What do you want to name this control? Scott, okay. Tab. And basically now I have a Scott control in the denmark.ui namespace, and I'm done, and I'm basically ready to add stuff to it. So again, simple example. Nice thing is all this stuff is extensible, so you can basically add it yourself, add your own snippets, share them, and we'll have an online gallery that you can go download as well as publish to in order to share with others. How many people have ever written a bug? I haven't either, but we all probably know someone who has. Can I go ahead and run a simple app that actually does have a bug that illustrates another new feature in VS 2010 that we'll talk about. It's a simple calculator app. I can do 45 divided by 9 divide it, hit F5 to continue, and I get 5 as a result. This app has a bug in that if I type 45 divided by 0 and divide it, hit F5, I get a blank result. So I don't handle division by 0. Simple scenario, kind of illustrates a very basic concept here. Now, in VS 2010 today, and previous versions of VS, obviously with debugging, you can set breakpoints and navigate throughout your app. Debugging, though, up to now, basically is a forward-only process. So once you hit a breakpoint and you start debugging forward, if you want to know what was the previous step, what did the call stack look like, you can't step back in the debugger. What we've done in VS 2010 is added a feature we call IntelliTrace, which now allows you actually to do just that. And so in addition to, as you can see here, where I'm stepping forward, I can also click this up arrow, and I can now step back in the call stack and also step forward again. And basically at any point in the call stack, all my watch windows, my variables, all my call stack will basically update. And so I now have backwards and forward support within the overall debugger. Makes it a lot easier to kind of go back in time and see what happened. We've coupled this IntelliTrace feature with something we call the black box recorder. Every time there's a plane crash, which since I'm traveling a lot on planes this week, I always feel weird telling the story. But anytime there's a plane crash, there's a black box recorder that people dig up that sort of records the last 30 minutes before the plane crashed. And so one of the things that we've done with VS 2010 is added the support now so that you can turn on tracing within an application, gather up effectively a dump stack and the call stack information leading up to a problem. And then when there is a problem, we'll basically dump it out all to disk. What's nice then is you can take that information, load it up into Visual Studio on a separate machine, so actually on the dev machine, import the call stack and dump information of that app, and then you as a developer now can actually sift through in the debugger both where the exception or the crash occurred, and then you can use the backtrace feature I just showed here so you can back up and actually see what in the app actually led to the problem on that user machine. Makes it a lot easier to do kind of postmortem analysis of app problems. Anyone that has a problem can basically, send you the information, and you can more easily figure out what the problem is. The second talk, a colleague of mine is going to be talking a lot more about VS 2010 from a testing perspective and some of the improvements that are coming there. Lots of other improvements coming in the testing space in general, both UI, automated, as well as manual testing, and hopefully a bunch of improvements you'll find useful. Last feature I'm going to show is, I'm always embarrassed to actually show this feature because it's, but I'm going to show it anyway, which is the add reference dialog. Anyway, notice how fast it came up. So one of the things that's nice in VS 2010 is you no longer, when you hit add reference, go, oh, shoot, I didn't mean to do that. And you don't have to go get a coffee. Which is healthier for you. Instead now you can do add reference, it'll come up pretty much immediately. We default to the projects tab, so you no longer have to wait for the .NET list to load or the COM list to load. Also then when you do click the .NET or COM list, the list actually populates asynchronously. You can cancel it, and you can also scroll before the final list has been displayed. So hopefully it makes it much faster to find and add references. Tiny little productivity win there that you can take advantage of. So those are a few kind of code editing improvements. We're going to see a lot more code editing and other IDE improvements throughout the day, but I thought I'd just start off with a couple of those. And hopefully, as you saw, pretty much all those features I demonstrated are ones that you can almost immediately take advantage of. They don't require learning a whole bunch of stuff in order to gain, hopefully, a nice productivity win throughout it. So now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about ASP.NET 4 and some of the things that are coming out both from a framework perspective and then also from a tooling perspective. There's a bunch of improvements across ASP.NET 4 that I'm going to be talking about today. WebForms, AJAX, JavaScript, MVC, and just kind of core server improvement capabilities. Let's start off by talking about some of the improvements we're doing with WebForms. So we're doing a lot of new improvements with ASP.NET 4 WebForms. Again, some of them cleaning up features in the past and responding to feedback, and some of them are a whole bunch of brand new capabilities that I'll show. Talking about some of the just sort of making things cleaner and simpler, what I thought I'd actually do is just create a new project as an ASP.NET project and show off that kind of new experience. So when you create a new project in VS 2010, we basically give you two options. You can create either an empty project with ASP.NET or a project that has kind of some pre-built application scaffolding in place. This is true for both web forms and with MVC. We both have now empty as well as app templates for both. Let's actually just create an empty ASP.NET project and as you can expect, you actually get an empty project. One of the things that if you're familiar with .NET 3.5 and VS 2008 when you create an ASP.NET project is you see a whole bunch of stuff inside the web.config file, and that's because .NET 3.5 and .NET 3 built on .NET 2, and so it had to register and add a whole bunch of things in the config file in order to enable features. Because .NET 4 is now a side-by-side release and a new release, the web.config file now is much simpler. This section hopefully will actually be gone with the final .NET 4 release. And so pretty much the only thing inside your config file is the compile section that turns on debugging. In fact, you can open up any empty directory. You don't need a config file at all in order to get all the features in .NET 4 to work. So just a little bit small thing that makes things a little bit simpler and cleaner. Other thing that's nice, I'll talk a little bit more later about, is some support we're adding with config files inside VS. So that now your config files, in addition to having kind of a master config file, you can actually now do subconfig files that configure settings on a per project basis or per configuration basis inside Visual Studio. So what you're seeing here now is I have a web.config, and I have a debug and a release version of that that are subnodes. You can create your own, so if you want to do testing, staging, deployment, hosted, you can have all those as subconfig files underneath that. And what you can then do is when you're in Visual Studio, you can pick what configuration am I running in, and then whenever you do a deployment, we'll actually merge and set the appropriate configuration settings on the generated app. And what's nice is you don't have to duplicate the settings in these subfiles. Instead, you actually just specify what are the differences from that main web.config file. So if it's just turning off debug equals true, that's just one line inside the debug file. All your other settings will be picked up. It's really useful for things like connection strings and debug equals true, but it can be used against any config section, including your own custom config sections that you add inside the config system. Other things in terms of just cleaning up and making things better, one of the core focuses we have with WebForms v4 is to generate cleaner HTML and make it easier to use JavaScript and CSS with your WebForm controls. You now have the ability to control the client IDs that get emitted from any server control within a page. So whatever you set the ID to can be what's output on the client. You don't have to write any custom code or add any CSS adapters in order to enable that. We also now generate CSS compliant rendering by default for all of our server controls. Some of our older controls have generated tables historically. You can now turn that off and get CSS-based output. We also then have a whole bunch of improvements to view state. Today with ASP.NET 3.5 and previous releases of ASP.NET, you could turn off view state on a per control basis. With ASP.NET 4, we've also now added a feature where you can turn off view state at the app or page level and then just turn it on individual controls that you need it. That makes it a lot cleaner for you to go ahead and turn it off globally and then basically enable it on a per control basis. Question in the front.
What tools, are there any new tools to controlling the HTML?
Ah, good question. Yeah. So the question is, are there any new tools for controlling the HTML that's outputted? For example, like, can you like templatize the control? A lot of our controls do support templates like they do with ASP.NET 3.5. We don't have a new generic mechanism for doing UI templating other than kind of the template mechanism that we have today. What we're trying to do a little bit in terms of from a rendering perspective is, and you'll see this on this next slide here, is wherever possible to do actually emit more semantically correct HTML that you can then stylize with CSS. So for example, this first control here is a menu control. I'm statically adding things into the list. It could just as easily be pulled from a site navigation system or a CMS system or an XML file. In previous versions of ASP.NET, the menu control would actually output a table-based layout for the menu, which made it pretty hard to customize. With ASP.NET 4, it'll just generate UL LI elements by default. And so you can basically use any kind of CSS or Zen Garden style approach to make that menu look however you want. So kind of we don't have a complete custom templating mechanism, but we're trying to basically allow you to use sort of semantic markup with CSS in order to stylize it however you want. The form view control by default today renders a table around it. That's actually useful for some positioning, but you can now turn it off, for example. And you know, in general, we try to update pretty much every control in the system so that unless you explicitly set a style on it, no inline styles or no miscellaneous tags or markup are omitted, and you can instead just do pure CSS with it. VS 2010 Designer, we've made a lot of improvements. It now supports CSS 2.1 and higher. And so all these new attributes, or all these attributes of CSS are now supported inside the designer, first child, etc. So you get a better WYSIWYG sense of what your page is going to look like. We're also then, with WebForms 4, adding support so that you can now do much cleaner URLs and for either SEO or aesthetic reasons within your application. So, for example, today with WebForms, you often would build a page like products.spx and then pass in a query string like category equals beverages. Instead, you can now go ahead and do semantic URLs where you do /products/beverages in a really clean way. If you're familiar with ASP.NET MVC, you'll know that MVC uses a routing engine that lets you do this. What we're doing with ASP.NET 4 is taking that routing engine and also using it for WebForms. And what's nice is you can actually have a single application that has part MVC, part web forms. They share the same routing engine, and you can basically route URLs to either a controller or a web form, but keep everything clean and semantic. Question?
Yeah, is there any support for generics in the repeater controls, for example?
Ah, good question. So the question is there any support for generics in the repeater controls? So specifically support in the markup? We don't have a generic syntax right now, I don't believe, that's new with .NET 4. It's something that we're looking at. But in terms of from a markup perspective, we're doing like templates, we don't today support that for the control declarations. I will show something a little bit later on with data where we are adding a nice feature for validations so that you can do model-based validation with the data controls. And that can work with generics, but we don't allow you to say repeater of type foo in .NET 4. It's a good feature, though, that we're thinking about for the future. People have asked us for that for XAML as well, and it's something that we're kind of looking at probably for the next release. Do we add it to both? Let's show a quick demo of this URL routing in action. So what I have here is a simple application. Let's go ahead and run it. And my database will load for the first time. There we go. I have a SQL Express database on my laptop with lots of things running, so sometimes it takes 2 seconds, the first hit. So what I can do basically is I have a simple page called products. It has a URL right now, products.aspx, category equals beverages. And I'm basically just doing a product listing of that page. And the way it's implemented is if you go into products.aspx, I basically have a list view control that is generating ULLI element for what each item looks like. And then in the code behind of this, I basically have a display category method, which is going off and doing a link query against the database, retrieving a bunch of products, binding it to the list. And then I have a page load event that's pulling a category from a query string and then just calling that helper method to display the list. So fairly simple app. If I want to enable clean URLs, there's sort of two ways I could do it. One is I could install the URL rewriting module that's now available for IS7, and I could configure it so that incoming URLs map to the same page that I have already written. And that'll actually work for a lot of scenarios. The only downside there is, well, the two downsides are, one is I have to put some configuration to do the mapping, which is okay. The second downside, though, is that any my code inside my app doesn't actually know what the real URL is. Instead, by default, for example, I still think I'm using a query string. And so anytime I do a form post back, my URL is actually going to go to the real URL or go to the query string URL instead of the nice logical URL. And it can make it just a little bit harder to kind of manage my app as I want to do kind of linking and relationships within it. So what you can do with .NET 4 is take advantage of this new routing engine support that we have. I can just go into the web.config file, I can basically add one line of code inside my global.asx application start event, which is to basically map a page route into my application. And so if you're familiar with ASP.NET MVC, we have a similar thing where you say routetable.routes.mapRoute, and you basically point to a controller class. Now you can basically register a route and point to an ASPX web form to handle it instead. And you can actually have, an app that has both within them. And all this is doing is I'm basically naming this map route product/browse. This is just a human-readable string that I can reference later. I then basically put the URL format that I want to map the route to. And so specifically, I want to support a format that looks like products/beverages. And so I'm indicating anything that maps to products cause this route to execute, and treat that second parameter or that second value in the URL as a parameter called category that I'm going to pass to my page, and then just map it to this ASPX page in order to render it. All I need to then do inside here is I'm going to replace request.querystring, and instead I'm going to say page.routeData.values category, which is that parameter that we're going to pull from the query string. And now I can say product/beverages. And I get the same thing. If I go condiments, I get a different setting there. So basically, write whatever, two lines of code there. Now you can get clean URLs within your Web Forms app. And what's nice is because I'm putting them in the routing engine, all of the HTML that gets sent back will actually use the same URL that the end user is going to see inside their browser. And I can also then, we have helper functions like response.redirect-to-route, where I could actually take that human-readable name that I registered that route as, and I can optionally call it, and I can pass parameters to it, and the routing engine will automatically send me to the right resource. Again, that works whether it's web forms or MVC, and I can have a single application that has both. So how many people here build public-facing websites or web apps? Okay, a number of people do. So one of the things, if you're building kind of any public-facing site that you know is pretty important, is search engine optimization and making sure that your site looks as good as possible to a search engine, since that drives a lot of traffic. It can usually drive 20 or 30% of the traffic to a typical site, sometimes more. So the semantic URL routing stuff that I showed previously can help with that if you use it judiciously and make sure you use it in an appropriate way. Other features in ASP.NET 4 that also can make it easier to get better SEO is the new meta APIs that we're adding to the page class. This is really useful anytime you have a master page and then have content pages that are derived from it. Because the meta tags live in the head section of your master page, today you end up having to write a bunch of additional code in order to actually set things like meta and description on your master page. Now you can basically just call these two new properties on the page class, and the head control will automatically emit them for you, let you get better search engine ranking. We also then have new response APIs. I mentioned response.redirect to route. There's also now a response redirect permanent, which instead of doing a 301, will do a 302, or I might have got that backwards, but basically instead of doing a temporary redirect, it'll do a permanent redirect. That ensures that search engines won't think, hey, this is just a temporary thing. They'll actually give you full relevancy on the URL that you're linking to, again, improving your search engine ranking. Another thing that I thought I'd quickly demo and talk about that a lot of people don't know about is something that we've released two weeks ago called the IIS SEO Toolkit. We've had it in beta for a couple months before that. How many people here have used it? Okay, three people. Good. Well, it's not good, but it's good for me because the rest of you haven't seen it. But it's a free tool you can download, and if you have anything public facing within your company. You really should go download it, spend 5 minutes, because it can actually significantly improve your increase your business traffic simply by telling you where on your site you're not very SEO friendly and how to fix it. You can install it through what we call the Web Platform Installer, which, how many people have used the Web Platform Installer? Right, a number of people have. Again, for people that haven't, I'll quickly pull it up. It's basically a free tool you can download from Microsoft.com/web. Basically what it does is when it first loads on a system, it looks at your machine, whether it's a client machine, whether it's XP, Vista, Windows 2008, Win 7, what have you. It's basically look to see all of the products, web technologies you have installed, and basically provides a simple way that you can install, find, and deploy components. So for example, I can see on my web server what modules I have installed, and I can simply, you know, if I want the URL rewriting module, simply check it, click install, and it'll go ahead and install it for me. Some of these modules are built in to IIS on versions of Windows. A lot of them are web downloads, and this thing automates installing all of them for you. This is true not just for IIS, this is true for ASP.NET, it's true for applications. So for example, in Embraco, I think the developers from Embraco are here today, great CMS. Basically, you can one-click install, click here. It'll bring down all of the components that it requires in the web stack, deploy them, then install Embraco, and then basically you have a CMS system all running on your system. So it makes it much easier for you to automate, deploy, install apps, as well as system components. And one of the components, which is what I'm going to demo right now, is the Search Engine Optimization Toolkit. What this does is basically, again, I can just click one install. It basically gives you an easy way you can point at a website and understand how you're doing from a search engine optimization perspective and what the search engine is going to see from it. So sometimes with this demo, I actually point people at, I ask people to volunteer their own websites and we can all look at it and see how bad they are from an SEO perspective. But since that turns out to actually be embarrassing many times, I thought I'd instead just actually embarrass myself. And specifically, I'm going to go off to a website that I wrote a couple years ago and kind of semi-maintain called scottgoo.com. And I wrote it in like 2005, and so that's why my last slides that are listed there are 2005. But it's a simple site. It's got 7 or 8 pages. Homepage, presentations page. I have a photo album page, which has some pictures from some trips I've done in the past. And then I have a link to my blog. And I used to have my blog on this site. Now it just redirects to weblogs.asp.net using a response.redirect. So it's a fairly simple site, 7 or 8 pages. And you might think, you know, I'm sure there's some SEO problems in Scott's site, but how bad could they really be? You know, so just for kicks, I installed the SEO toolkit. It adds a little icon in the IS7 admin tool. Click it. I can say, let's create a new analysis report. And I'm going to call this Denmark. Type in scottgoo.com as the URL. You can indicate like how many URLs to follow and how big you should follow it, whether you want to log in or authenticate, and then whether or not I want to follow sublinks. And once you click OK, what this is going to go ahead and do, and we'll see how fast the network is right now, it's going to basically crawl my website just like Google or Bing would. So basically it's going to hit the root URL I type in, and then it's going to, very slowly because the network's slow, basically crawl and follow every link it finds and index it, look at the content within it, look for SEO violations, and then once it's done, it's going to generate a full report for me telling me all the problems that might exist with that site and specifically how I can go ahead and fix them. What's nice about this tool is it doesn't require you to have IIS7 on the server. It will actually work against any web server, so you can run it against IIS5, IIS6, you can run it against Apache on Linux. All you need to do is you need to install the IIS7 client admin tool. But that's built into both Vista and Win7, as well as obviously our more recent server operating systems. And then once you do that, you can point, again, at any URL, any server, basically point at it, it's crawling it. This usually goes faster, but I think the network's a little bit slow. Once it's done, it'll basically generate a report for me telling me all the problems and how to fix it. So any guesses on how many, with 7 or 8 pages on my site, how many violations could I possibly have? Any bidders? 100. I hear 100. Do I hear higher or lower? How many people think it's higher? How do you think it's lower than 100? How many people think it's higher than 100? Oh, okay. How many people just have no idea? Okay. Well, we're crawling. We're crawling your links here. We've got a couple hundred more links to go. You'd wonder. I mean, let's ask another question. How many violations on average per ASPX page do you think I have? I'll tell you, the total app logic in this app is like 250 lines of code. So how many violations do you think I could have in 250 lines of code? Per ASPX page. Rough guess. 50. Oh, wow. Okay. You really think I'm a bad developer. Okay. Okay. So I hear 50. Okay. We'll see very shortly. This is hopefully going to finish.
Scott,
we'll get actually a sense.
Yeah. I have a question.
Sure.
The web platform installer, can it be used to package our own web applications in kind of a click-once fashion?
Great, yeah, that's a great question. So the web platform install I showed using Embraco, installing Embraco, or starting to install Embraco with the web platform installer. What's nice is that you can build your own packages and use the web platform installer as well. And there's actually two modes you can do that with the web platform installer. One is you can package it up and actually publish it, tell us the pointer to it. The way it works is the web platform installer retrieves an RSS file, RSS feed from our site. And so if we put you in that feed, you'll show up in that list. When someone clicks to install it, we actually download the app from your site. So anytime anyone installs Embraco using the web platform installer, it actually goes to the Embraco site to download the package. And the benefit there is it means you can update the package whenever you want. So it's great for if you want to share your apps with other people. In a host environment or an enterprise, you just want to actually restrict it just to your friends or your group, there's actually a feature in the web platform installer where you can actually point to your own RSS feed and add to our list. So you could have your own RSS feed within your organization and basically a private apps that you install as well. Question is, can it be used for offline? Not really, unless the package is already installed on the machine. Basically, because we download it directly. So probably not the best for offline. There is, though, a thing called MS Deploy, which is separate from the web platform installer, though we use some of the same technology. That does provide an easy way that you can go ahead and deploy an app on a remote system. What's nice about MS Deploy is it does allow you to snapshot an app from server A to a local disk. You can then go offline, and then basically you can point to any server you can access, including your local one, and install from the disk. And so MS Deploy is definitely something I recommend taking a look at. It does work with IIS6 and IIS7. You can get it through the web platform installer. And a little bit later on in this talk, I'll talk about with VS 2010, you can actually take any ASP.NET project in VS 2010 and package it up into an MS Deploy project. So by default, you can open up any website, right-click, and say deploy, and it'll actually deploy using the MS Deploy infrastructure. Yeah?
Can I do SEO analysis using an API?
Can you do,
run this using an API and not a UI?
Good question, yeah. Can you run this through an API? I think there is a command line version that you can actually run through. I think this is still analyzing my report here. I might cancel this because I actually have a version of the report that I think is actually saved on disk that I might just use. Come back. Let me launch up another version while that one's finishing. So I have an existing report that I did actually in Sweden and Oslo. So someone had said, oh, I think the total number of failures Scott must have is 1,000 or a couple hundred or something. So it turns out I have 713 violations across those six pages. So when you said I might have 50 errors per page, you're actually too low. I have 100 errors per page, which is pretty impressive, I think. What's nice about the report is not only does it tell you that you suck, but it actually tells you how you suck and how you can unsuck yourself in the future. So, for example, some of these things are minor. I mean, the nice thing is it takes about 30 minutes probably to actually fix all these violations. So it's not a bunch of code. But, for example, all my images on my photo album, turns out I'm not setting the alt attribute. And so search engine sees the picture of a lion, has no idea it's a lion. If I actually put it in the alt description, I could actually have a descriptive thing saying, hey, this is a lion in the Serengeti, blah, 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 blah. And suddenly, I get a little bit more traffic from a search engine for people looking for lions in the Serengeti. So again, that's a simple one to fix. Let's look at some other ones. I'm missing a description attribute on the meta section of all my head files within my site. And so again, I'm not actually saying, hey, this is a photo album of the type this. Instead, I basically am not returning anything. Now with ASP.NET 4, I can programmatically set the description and the meta key tags. If I was using the older version, I could actually write some code to do this as well. Again, simple fix would solve a lot of errors. This is an interesting one, which is kind of a subtle thing that a lot of people don't realize about search engines, which is they look at every URL as a unique URL if it's cased differently. So in other words, right here in my app, I have some code that is photo ID equals 0, album ID equals 1. Turns out I do that logic two places in my app to set the URL. One of them I do a capital A, and one I do a lowercase a for the album parameter. Google thinks those are two completely different URLs. Even though they have the same value and they're going to actually return the same content, it's two URLs. And what that means from a relevancy ranking is they're actually going to dramatically lower the relevancy ranking of that page for me because they think it's duplicated content that you can access from two different places. And so simply by going in and making a one-character fix in my app, I'll actually get much higher ranking. And you can actually see all the URLs, and better yet, you can actually see both the content as well as what links to those URLs and from where they link to within the report. So it's easy to pinpoint and find. My blog, you click that blog link, and I said I did a redirect to my new blog. I was kind of lazy, and so rather than actually go in and change the sitemap to actually point to my blog and just do an anchor directly to it, I just updated my blog.sbx page to get rid of all the content and just do a response.redirect. But because I was doing response.redirect, that's a temporary redirect, and the search engine thinks, oh, that's a temporary thing, and so it's actually not going to pass on the relevancy that it would if I used a permanent redirect with a different HTTP header. Again, in ASP.NET 4, there's now a permanent redirect response method. ASP.NET 3.5, I can write one extra parameter response.redirect get it as well. Again, it's going to improve my search relevancy. Last one I'll just show in terms of my example is what we call canonical format errors. So again, this is sort of like casing. But basically, depending on your order of your query string parameters, the Google and Bing are going to think they're completely different pages. And so because I have photo ID and then album later, and then some of them I have album and elsewhere, it's saying you're returning the same content, but because they're different URLs, you're basically not going to get the relevancy ranking that you should. And the great thing in all these things is we actually have recommended actions that describe how you fix them. For certain things, if you're running IS7, we actually will have a one-click way inside the tool that will actually, for example, register a URL rewriting rule to fix some of these things. And so you can actually, in an automated way, fix some of these things. But the great thing is, again, regardless of what technology you're using, run the admin tool, point at your site, and you'll find a whole bunch of ways that you can actually make it better. And typically, actually, if you make all these changes, you'll probably see your traffic go up by about 20 or 25% on your website, just because it makes that big a difference in some cases from a search engine perspective. What's great is you can run it on your friend's site, too. You can copy and paste the report, send it to them, and just say, you suck. Other improvements in .NET 4. with ASP.NET. A lot of improvements to the data control space, new controls that you can use for data access. We have now built-in charting control, so the ASP chart control is now built into the box. This is previously a free download that a lot of people don't know about with .NET 3.5 SP1. .NET 4, it's just built in, both for ASP.NET as well as for Windows Forms, and you can also use it inside WPF apps. Lets you do bi charts, 3D charts, financial analyst charts. There's even actually some AJAX functionality in some of the controls that you can also use. There's a new ASP query extender control that you can use to enable better searching of your sites. This is useful if you want to do custom searches over data. Today, you often do that by taking parameters from a user, and you concatenate them together to do light queries. It's kind of dangerous often to do that because that's kind of rife with SQL injection attack potential. And if you're doing something with link, either link to SQL or link to entities, it's particularly hard because link is a typed query language. You can use a dynamic link library that we have. I have a blog post on it to do those types of dynamic query support scenarios. But now in .NET 4 and ASP.NET 4, we now have a query extender control that you can drop on a page. This, again, makes it much easier for you to do drop-down light queries, complete custom queries the end user can customize, and then run them against any linked data source. Lots of improvements coming with dynamic data, new templating support and for fields, for entities, many-to-many support, inheritance support. So if you want to build a dynamic data site, lots of improvements there. This final improvement works not just for dynamic data sites, but also for any ASP.NET web form out there. And basically, this lets you do what's called model-aware UI validation. The benefit with this is a lot of people probably built data entry apps with ASP.NET. If you have a product object and some fields are required, today, if you're using a data grid or a form view control, you end up having to templatize it and then drop in validation controls in ASP.NET in order to get validation. And if there's an error and you want to highlight the text box, you end up having to use handle an event and basically use the find control in order to find the text box, set focus, and change on it from within your server code. And the downside of that is you have to write a lot of code. And the other downside is you end up duplicating your validation logic in both your UI layer as well as sometimes in your actual business objects or data model layer. So what we're doing with .NET 4 is we now have this new helper function that works in all the data controls where you can basically say enable dynamic validation. And you basically pass in the type of the object. And so I can take a data grid and say enable validation type of product. And we'll actually look at that product object, look to see if there's any of the data annotation features that I'll be demoing a little bit later on it, and then automatically wire up validation controls for all the input elements within that data control based on the actual validation rules in your business object. It lets you keep your code a lot drier and a lot cleaner. 3 more minutes? Okay. We're going to go quickly. We're almost halfway through. Lots of other improvements in the data space. We're going to be demoing some of this a little bit later on. In the ADO.NET entity, so we have lots of improvements to link to SQL in .NET 4. We're also making some pretty big improvements to the entity framework in .NET 4. I actually don't run the data team, so when I say lots of improvements, I'm not actually talking about my own team, but rather a peer team. Entity framework is one of those technologies that was introduced with .NET 3.5 SP1. We got some mixed feedback, lots of things people asked for that they wanted in terms of feature enhancements. I think that team's done a pretty good job in .NET 4 in terms of responding to that. Now supports model-aware, model-first, as well as plain old CLR object or POCO support for your entity models. Lazy loading is now enabled by default. There's automatic pluralization and singularization as you actually model from a database. So products become product and categories become category. And that is language overridable, so you can actually create different language rules for different languages. Full link support, better support for things like foreign keys in models, which is from an object-oriented perspective, it's not always super clean, but in a stateless web scenario, is actually really useful. That's now an option in terms of automatically enabling. We now have a disconnected API, so that if you want to transfer entities across web services or between a client and a server, it's more easy to reconnect it back. And then everything that's generated by the designer is completely customizable with T4 templates. And I'll show demos of that a little bit later. Lots of improvements coming in the JavaScript space, much faster and better JavaScript IntelliSense. In general, these are sort of some examples of some of the perf improvements we get with IntelliSense going from VS 2008 to VS 2010 with AJAX. These are different AJAX libraries. You can see the multiples of how much faster it got improved. In general, we find anything under a second, no one actually notices. This is when you first load the file up from the point that you get full IntelliSense on it. Other improvements that we've done with VS 2008 today, you can do these doc comments in JavaScript. And when you do that, on the left-hand side, you can see that we actually give you full IntelliSense help information about it. On the right-hand side, though, in VS 2008, we don't actually provide full IntelliSense within the same file that the particular method is being commented. In VS 2010, we now do. And we actually provide a whole bunch of other improvements throughout the stack. Also handle errors much more gracefully in 2010. Both in terms of coding errors as well as sort of cases where you're doing really dynamic things with JavaScript, we're much more forgiving, and it kind of works much better now. So let's quickly do a demo of this. And load this up here. So in VS 2010 today, let me zoom in a little bit. VS 2008 today, I could say var x equals, or let's say Denmark equals Scott. And I can then say Denmark dot, and notice I get IntelliSense based on a string. If I change Scott to be a number, Denmark dot, and I'll now get IntelliSense based on a number. So this works in 2008 today. What we've done in 2010 is made this even richer, so that in addition to doing kind of explicit declarations like that, you could also say window Denmark equals Scott, and now notice I get IntelliSense, and somewhere there it showed up in the list. There it is. Basically, you get IntelliSense for this variable that's being declared through the window object as well. So any kind of dynamic declaration within IntelliSense, you now get support for as well. And what's cool is you can actually even do this, where you say for var I equals 0, I less than 10 or 20, I guess. I can't actually add. You can now actually say Denmark, plus I. You can now say Denmark 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And so I'm basically dynamically creating 10 Denmark variables in the fly, and I'm getting full IntelliSense against it. When I actually use it, you'll actually get type-based information based on the variable declaration as well. So lots of other improvements through IntelliSense. In addition to this just being kind of a useful feature, it's not just a stupid pet trick. This is actually useful for a lot of libraries like jQuery, Prototype, etc. They actually use these types of techniques to keep their libraries small, and this means that you now get full IntelliSense against it. We also then have IntelliSense, so if you want to do namespaces in, say, AJAX, you do that. We work with other libraries as well besides our own. So, for example, Yahoo UI has a notion of doing namespaces. And I could do yahoo.scott.namespace. And again, this is using Yahoo UI's approach to doing namespaces. It all works. We also have full jQuery support, including with nested selectors support inside 2010 as well. Other improvements to AJAX, lots of client-side capability improvements that we're adding. One of the big ones that you can take advantage of is this thing we call client templates. And this allows you to basically take HTML, put markers in it, sort of like similar to both Silverlight and WPF-based data binding extensions, basically within your markup. And then you can basically load and run this template on the client side and do client-side data binding, both one-way as well as two-way input. Ends up being a pretty easy way you can do. It also supports change tracking. Provides an easy way if you want to do kind of an interactive data-bound form or any type of data entry with AJAX. Makes it pretty clean. Our approach with our AJAX library with ASP.NET AJAX going forward is is to basically partner with a bunch of other Ajax libraries as well. And so we're adding features like this client template library, which is kind of new functionality that no one else really supports today. What's cool is you can also integrate jQuery as part of this template library, part of this client template. And so you can have some parts be in jQuery, some parts be in ASP.NET Ajax, and you hopefully get kind of a nice combined approach in terms of how the two work. Lots of other improvements to Ajax, but I won't drill into it here. I have a whole talk on ASP.NET MVC, so I'm going to cover this also in much more depth in my next talk. But at a high level, earlier this year we introduced ASP.NET MVC as another option for doing UI development with ASP.NET. How many people here are actually using ASP.NET MVC? Cool. How many people here are using web forms? Cool. Key message, want to make sure everyone leaves with, we love you both. ASP.NET MVC doesn't replace web forms. Web forms doesn't replace MVC. One is not better than the other. They're both approaches that hopefully you saw with web forms we're investing heavily in with 4. With MVC in my talk there, you'll see we're investing heavily in there as well. And we're basically kind of recognizing that some people prefer one approach, some people prefer another approach, and we want to make sure we have a great development story for everyone, regardless of whichever preference you have. Key thing also then is that all, MVC and web forms are basically UI layers. They all sit on top of the same core engine of ASP.NET. So things like personalization, caching, security, configuration, state management, compilation, all that stuff is just shared across both of them. And with things like the URL routing engine stuff that I showed earlier in this talk, it makes it even easier now with .NET 4 to basically build an app that actually uses even a hybrid of the two. And so that way you can pick whichever works best for a scenario or whichever you feel most comfortable with. But both we're investing heavily in going forward. And I'll talk more about ASP.NET MVC and some of the specific V2 features in my second talk. ASP.NET MVC 2 will be built into VS 2010 and .NET 4. And so when you install it, you basically get that as an option by default. We're also then making MVC 2 available down level on .NET 3.5 as well as VS 2008. So if it's going to take you a while to upgrade to 2010 and .NET 4, great thing is you can still use the new features in MVC 2. Person after me is going to talk a lot more about TFS 2010. I'll just briefly say there's tons of improvements coming as part of that release, which is now included in all MSDN subscriptions. In particular, how many of you here are using TFS today? Probably took you, 10 minutes to set up? So one of the things that people often criticize TFS today is it takes a little while to configure and set up. TFS 2010, under 20 minutes in order to actually set up on a clean machine. No longer requires SharePoint. SharePoint's still integrated and supported, but if you just want to quickly get source control or quickly get bug and work item tracking or quickly get a continuous integration server set up, under 20 minutes on a clean machine, you can do so. You can now install it both on client as well as server operating systems. It no longer requires full SQL. It actually works with SQL Express, which is free, lets you quickly set up a server. And you'll see a lot more demos and talks about that briefly. Last thing I'll talk about in terms of core ASP.NET improvements, lots of just sort of improvements to the base below the UI layer. Specifically, we're extending our cache infrastructure, which is something we've had since the very beginning with ASP.NET. With ASP.NET 4, we're making caching extensible, which means that you can plug in your own cache engine into ASP.NET. We're then going to be shipping early next year, first half next year, a project we call Velocity, which is basically a middle-tier cache server, which will be a free technology you can take advantage of with .NET. And what this does is it means that you can now have multiple front-end web servers that actually point to a shared cache server. And now if you output cache or data cache anything when a user hits server A, when they go to server B on another request, that same data can be shared from a cache perspective. And so you don't have to duplicate the caches in all the front-end systems. Lots of other features added to the caching space. We now have a pre-start event so that you can basically, on application startup, pre-cache a whole bunch of data and get your app ready to run before the first user hits it, so your app's always immediately responsive. New perf monitoring and overall diagnostic information, which is great for administrators. And we now support a new syntax inside all of our pages for doing automatic HTML encoding for prevention of cross-site scripting attacks. Last feature, and then I'll do the summary, is deployment. I talked briefly about how with your web.config files, you can now have web.config files specific to a configuration inside VS. We also, as part of this, integrate with this MS Deploy infrastructure, which I highly recommend taking advantage of for deployment. Easy allows you now inside VS to package up an app, point to a server, and deploy it. What's great is it not only takes your content and your code, it'll take things like SSL certs, custom registry entries, file ACLs, and we also have an option in VS where you can actually say, point us at a database or a database schema, and we'll actually suck out the schema from the database when you do a deploy, create a .SQL file, copy it to the server, and then actually deploy it to the database server in production. So it's much easier now to package up your database and get it installed as part of your application. MS Deploy works over HTTP, so it works in both enterprise as well as hosted environments. It also works in what we call hosted environments, so you don't have to be an admin on the server machine in order to install an app. Someone on the machine can say, I'm going to enable MS Deploy, and I'm going to allow you to deploy apps to these three sites, and then you can remotely, either with VS or from a command line tool, go ahead and deploy it. It also will work in with TFS, and so as part of your build process or as your continuous integration process, you could have a final step be kick off the deployment of a new version to a testing server or staging server and completely automate that. So lots of features I hopefully covered, kind of a whirlwind pace here. A lot more features we're going to be talking about later today. But hopefully this gave you a brief taste of BS 2010 and ASP.NET 4 from a web development perspective. Lots more features in the client space, server space, workflow space, web service space, enterprise space, some of which we're going to be talking about later today. There's a lot more web features I also wasn't able to cover, but hopefully you saw some things here that again, you can immediately take advantage of without having to learn that much more about it, and then also some great new features that can let you do some pretty substantial improvements to your applications, both from a feature set as well as a productivity perspective. So with that, I'm going to pass it off to the next speaker.